just overall your thoughts on life inside the bubble right now.
It's all good, mate. Let's be clear, mate. This is not Syria, mate. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that hard. It's not that difficult, mate. You know what I mean? We're living in a bloody resort, you know.
Yeah! NBA Straya. How you going? That's right, it's NBA Straya. It's Wednesday, July 22, Wednesday, am I right? Yeah, there you go, hump day. I am your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes for Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, and literally whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet folding stuff. And I'm here in Larry Armour Studios with my cutout co-host, Deli, just behind my shoulder. And I did a bit of a cleanup, so old mate shit is not everywhere at the moment, which is pretty nice. There's still a pack of anti-coal right there and a couple of glasses, but she'll be right. Anyway, I'd usually be letting you know who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, of course, who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA, but the NBA season is still suspended. It's been 133 days without NBA basketball. But there's basketball next week, baby. Yes. Not bad. Good size. So this is another Fuck It Wednesday episode of NBA Stray Up. We are bringing in another special guest. It's awesome. It's a great time. We've had gold medal winners, NBL, NBA champions on the show, platinum recording artists, AFL players, pro gamers, TV stars, radio hosts, comedians. This week, another NBL champion, two-time Olympian, absolutely legendary bloke, Mark Worthington. Wortho, it is a great chat with Wortho. Some awesome stories from Puerto Rico, from three NBL clubs going bust on him. Oh, man, it's a good, good time with Wortho. Enjoy that. And with the news that the NBA awards are done, we also have our awards picked for the NBA season so far. And there's a fair bit of news to smash as well. So it's pretty good. We've also got a top five, quick top five predictions from the bubble. Should be good. And we're going to do an NBA Australia time machine and go all the way back to 1995. I think this might be the last NBA Australia time machine we do, because we've got basketball next week. Legendary. We're going to finish up with a new Deli review as well to put a smile on your dial. And it's going to be fun as all get out. All right, let's get into it, shall we? This is episode 447 of NBA Australia. Let's go.
This is Matthew Dellavedova, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
You better! Well, you better watch out for the Dwight Howard dipshit attack. Oh, jeez, what a dipshit that guy is. Just don't pay attention to Dwight Howard. I feel like that should be a pretty easy rule and hard, fast rule to live by, right? Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that in a second. Let's start off today's show the way we start every show here at NBA Australia. It's weekly at the moment, usually daily. The daily whip around, that's right. Great news to kick off. Good news. How good's this? Good news, everybody. Zero NBA players tested positive for the Rona out of the 346 players tested at Orlando since July 13. That is fucking gross. So we got that a couple of days ago. The bubble. It's working. It's working. Maybe. See, this is the ultimate, like, you raise my hopes and then dash them quite expertly. It's like, oh, we've got zero cases. Fingers crossed the exact same thing happens next fucking Monday, right? And then we actually get basketball next weekend. Yes, come on. Let's speak it into existence. In other Ronan news, Pat Connaughton of the Bucks has got that Rona. He isn't actually in Orlando yet, which is why he's not with the Bucks. He has that Rona. I mentioned in Friday's Yeah Nah video, Zion, the Big Rig, and Montrez Harrell have both bounced from the bubble, the Buble. Both for family matters. Zion is a family medical matter. Trez is just a family matter. So hopefully they're all okay. Hopefully their fams are all okay. The protocols that they have to go through to actually get back in the bubble are pretty stringent. They're going to be tested every day that they're not in the bubble and turn a negative, and then they've got to quarantine for four more days once they get back and go negative that entire time as well, obviously. So, fingers crossed we get Zion and Trez back A-OK. Rusty had that Rona. We mentioned this last week. Hopefully he was back with the Rockets in Orlando this week. Hopefully. Well, at least, you know, quarantining. So it's going to be interesting to see how Rusty goes. Some bad news, though. Justice Winslow got hurt again. Hurt his hip in scrimmage, so the Grizz have announced that he's done for the year. They've shut him down, which is fucked. I just wanted to see what the Grizzlies could do. He gave them an extra fun edge and an extra wrinkle where you're like, oh, man, they were kind of shit, the Grizzlies, without Crowder and Solomon Hill, who they traded to the Heat, along with Andre Iguodala, to get basically Justice. And Justice comes back and he's hurt. So that's a bit fucked. Another bad injury, shitty news, again with another young player. Mavi Bagues hurt his foot. It's a lateral sprain of his right foot. So he's done for the season as well, too. God damn it. Sacramento have got an okay-looking kind of schedule. Just enough to give them a puncher's chance if they were all completely healthy. Look, they would have been fucked because half their team's got their Rona, Alex Len, the Ukrainian stepladder, Harrison Barnes. A bunch of them weren't even going to Orlando happening, well, in Orlando yet anyway. So who knows what would have happened with Sacramento, but it just would have been fun to see Mavi Bagues just go hammer and tongs with Diaz and Fox just for a little bit. Just to see what could happen. But not going to happen. And that's the story with Mavi Bagues. Don't forget the bloke taken ahead of Luka Doncic. Just can't stay on the fucking floor. Killing me. All right, I mentioned this at the top. The NBA awards are done for the season. It was announced this week. The last 8 games of the regular season won't count for the performance awards. That means MVP, Rookie of the Year, etc., etc., etc. The counting stats, though, will include the last 8 games, though. So for stat leaders, i.e. points per game, etc. Anyway, so we're going to do our actual proper awards just a little bit later. And Glenn Taylor, owner of the Wolves, is apparently looking to sell the team. A condition of this sale apparently is that they have to stay in Minnesota. So unfortunately, my Seattle Supersonics probably aren't on the cards to return. But the cool part is Kevin Garnett and a group of associates are apparently interested in buying it from Glenn Taylor. I assume with a big gem. But that would be fucking great, considering that KG and Glenn Taylor fucking hate each other. If KG bought the goddamn Wolves off Taylor, the man who KG made an absolute shit ton of money, and Glenn Taylor did pay KG a shit ton of money as well. But look, I would love for KG to buy the Wolves, if only for the simple fact that he could then retire his own fucking jersey. Yes! Let's get that fucking happening! KG standing next to KG, retiring his KG jersey up into the rafters there in Target Center. That would be fucking grass. Let's do it. Love it. Buy the Wolves KG. This would be amazing. I would love that. And finally, the NBA apparently announced that the NBA draft lottery has moved forward, from August 25 to August 20, which is awesome because you know me, NBA Australia loves the draft lottery. It's my third favorite, I think, NBA day of the year. It goes opening day, draft lottery. I fucking love it. So August 20, circle that in your calendars, I will. And now we're going to do a bit of a quick dickhead of the week. We haven't done one of these for a while because, you know, weekly shows, it might be a bit much, but let's just do it anyway then, shall we?
Dickhead of the week.
Dwight Howard. Is it a surprise to anybody that he's the world's tallest fuckhead? Yeah, he goes live on the old IG from Orlando. And I don't know, it just says a bunch of dumb shit. Who wants an NBA mask? We about to sell them on eBay. Well, not eBay, Amazon. Amazon NBA. Realizing that Amazon are a partner of the NBA. What a dummy. He also then pointed out they tried to make a big deal about what I said about wearing the mask, and I get it. Common sense. It's not common, but I understand why certain people say certain things. Now, look, Dwight is just an absolute fucking masterclass in being a dipshit who doesn't know when to stop talking. Common sense, it's not common, but I understand why certain people say certain things. Dwight, just shut the fuck up, you idiot. Because then he went on to say, I don't know that the coronavirus be flying through the air looking for people. Dwight, do you not understand how viruses work, you fucking numbskull? He then added, let me stop because I don't want people to think that this ain't serious. It's very serious, y'all, but these are jokes. Well, maybe don't joke about it, you fucking numbskull. And I guess we're not supposed to joke. Well, maybe not with 140,000 people dead, you piece of shit. But with everything going on, we need some positivity, man. We need some jokes. We need people to laugh and smile. No one's laughing and smiling at you, Dwight, you fuck knuckle. Jesus Christ, there's a reason that Dwight's been on 6 different NBA teams who were all super fucking happy to get rid of this dead shit, right? Like, this is the reason. He's a giant fuckhead. Jesus, Dwight, shut the fuck up. No one cares. Christ almighty. All right. I've missed Dickhead of the Week. Can you tell? All right, let's do a bit of the unpopular opinion of the day. Award winners edition. Now, we did this, I think it was around the halfway mark of the season, where we had the unpopular opinion award winners, where the MVP of the year was Luka, because he's just fucking great and awesome, and has that Mavs team at a point where no one thought they'd be anywhere near this good, and it's all because of Luka. That's a good argument. I don't mind that. The Rookie of the Year was Eric Paschal. Sure. Defensive Player of the Year was Rudy Gobert. The Staffel Tower. The Most Improved was Devontae Graham. The Sixth Man of the Year was D. Rose. Nice. And Coach of the Year was Steve Kerr. Jesus. I don't like too many of those unpopular opinion award winners anyway, so I guess that is unpopular opinion. So, for our actual 2020 award winners for NBA Australia, what do you reckon? Drum roll, please. MVP. I think it's Giannis. Like, you don't fuck around. Giannis wins MVP. LeBron comes second. Probably fast Jimmy Harden. 3. I mean, there was a point where Harden was winning the award in people's minds. But at the same time, as I pointed out, at different points of the season, the argument has always been, oh, it's Giannis and Luka. Oh, now it's Giannis and LeBron. Now it's Giannis and Harden. Now it's Giannis and LeBron. It's like, there's one person who's fucking constant there, mate. Giannis. So he wins the MVP. And fuck off otherwise. LeBron could have had a chance to actually steal it from him down the stretch. Giannis hurt his knee. LeBron was coming on strong. But you know what? Too fucking bad. Got to play the games that you play in. And you got to play them hard. This is why the regular season does matter. Anyway. Rookie of the Year. Rookie! Ja Morant is obviously the Rookie of the Year. Really fun field, though, behind him. Kendrick Nunn I've got at number 2, and Brandon Clark at number 3. Zion just didn't play anywhere, obviously, near enough games. Look, it would have been a fun conversation had the season played out as planned. But, you know, ifs and buts, you know, what we're saying about that. No chance. Eric Paschal, Tyler Hero, rounds out the 5. Lots of good names in there. Fun Rookie of the Year class. Going to be interesting to see what Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero can do for Miami and what Jar and Brandon can do in Memphis. It's going to be fascinating. And obviously Zion, if he hopefully gets back, we get to see some more. Defensive Player of the Year. Defensive Player, Giannis Antetokounmpo. That's right. I'm giving him MVP and Defensive Player. Big Simo comes in second. Ben Simmons. Because he can guard 1 through 5 and has been an absolute fucking devastator on both ends of the floor this season. I've loved Big Simo. It's been great. And number 3, I've got Rudy Gobert. Am I colored by the fact that he tried to give everyone the Rona? Yes. But too bad, you French bastard. Suck it. Most Improved. Bam. Most Improved Player. Bam Adebayo. Love it. He was amazing all year. Chucked in a couple of triple doubles to Bam. Now, this is my thing when it comes to Most Improved. I could have almost put Luka here because one of the biggest steps is to go from really good player to absolute super duper fucking star. To go from star player to franchise player. And Luka did that this year. But at the same time, it was the number 3 pick in the draft. I'm not going to give it to you if you're basically drafted as the player who's going to become a franchise player. So good on him. Whereas Bam and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who comes in number 2, blokes who were picked later in the lottery turned into world beaters. And Devontae Graham comes in 3rd, even though he fell off a cliff basically for the last 2 months of the season, especially his shooting. But look, he was very, very good for a very large part of the season. So good job, Devontae Graham. Sixth Man of the Year. I mentioned D-Rose in the unpopular opinion of the award winner, but Trez wins this. Sixth Man, Trez. Montrezl Harrell was amazing all season for the Clips. There were games where the Clippers are just like, yeah, we're not that interested. Paul George is loafing through a game. Kawhi's maybe sitting down. Isn't that right, Kawhi? Because you're just hanging out, having a laugh. And Trez would come on, bit of pick and roll with Lou Will. Boom, off you go. And people were like, oh, why wouldn't Lou Will win then? It's because fuck Lou Will. Trez has been way more important to that team's success than Lou Will has. D-Rose comes in second. He was amazing in Detroit all season. I really enjoyed his year. And Dennis Schröder and German Rondo comes in third in sixth man of the year. Weirdly enough, Schröder averaged more minutes per game than Giannis, the MVP. So sixth man contender playing more minutes than the MVP. Interesting. And finally, coach of the year. Look, Nick Nurse or Buds. Dealer's choice. I kind of want to give it to Buds. Quiet as fuck. They just decimated the competition, Buds and the Bucks. Don't forget, they were on like a fucking 70-win pace there for most of this season. And then dialed it back a little bit after Giannis was like, oh shit, I got hurt. Nick Nurse, though, has the Raptors, the defending champions, lose their best player and one of their best wing defenders in Danny Green too, as well as obviously Kawhi. And they don't miss a beat. They're second in the East. They're crushing it. They're awesome. Love it. So look, Buds, Nick Nurse, you can take your pick. I'm going to give it to Buds because they've been incredible all year, Milwaukee. Good job, Milwaukee. I heard it's Algonquin for the good land. And third, Taylor Jenkins of the Grizz or Nate McMillan of the Pacers. Everyone expected the Pacers to be dog shit without Victor Oladipo. And the Grizzlies, I think I called them at the start of the season, easily the worst team in the NBA, and they're going to make the playoffs. So at the end of this, remember, I'm a fucking idiot. And right, top five season, top five predictions for the bubble. We're about to hit the bubble next week. What do you reckon? Excited? I know I am. What about Stephen A. Smith? Do you reckon he's excited? I mean, he probably is.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, Lord. That's right. I can't wait. I'm excited. Number five. Top five predictions for the bubble. Toronto. We'll get off to a slow start because Norm Powell will be in a shooting funk after catching that huge fucking fish. His arms are going to be tired. Did you see that? Norm Powell, that huge fish. We had Ben Simmons not being able to throw a fucking fish back into a goddamn lake the other day. Meanwhile, Norm Powell's out there with a picture of him with the world's biggest fish. I didn't even look into the fact of whether or not it's fake or real. I don't care. It was a funny photo. Good job, Norm Powell. Number four, Miami bow out in the first round because Myers Leonard has been too busy shotgunning all the beers. I don't know. Do you remember that spot in, what was it, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back where they're filming Jay and he's like, I am the master of the clit. And Myers Leonard is basically doing that, but for shotgunning beers. He's like, I am the master of sculling, shotgunning, any other way you want to really quickly drink a beer. I am the best at it. It's like, all right, Myers, settle down. I'm not sure if your teammates are going to be like, oh, that's fucking neat. I mean, I think it's cool, but I'm just a fucking moron. Miami, they're going to bout in the first round because Myers Leonard still drunk from shotgunning all the beers. Number three, Utah will suck because Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert really just can't fucking stand each other. I mean, this is just going to happen. This isn't even a prediction, really. This is happening already. Even with Jingles playing Peacemaker, they're still fucked. Number two, Houston are going to lose in the first round because Harden catches the Rona from a rando stripper in Florida named Destiny that he smuggles onto the campus, and somehow Rusty gets it twice. But yeah, Houston out in the first round because of Harden strippers. And number one, prediction from the bubble, the Clippers will win the title unless they play Philly. Oh, that's actually a good prediction. Not bad, not bad, not bad. All right, good stuff. Let's take a quick break. We're going back with the NBA Australia Time Machine, which is going to be 1995 finals, Shaq versus Hakeem. And then after that, we'll come back with Wurtho. Good stuff. We're back in just a second. Right after, let's say Rowdy.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. Yes, NBA Australia time machine. Love NBA Australia Time Machine. Might be the last one we do, though, because we've got basketball next week. The NBA Australia Time Machine is, don't forget, brought to you by thedailyliquor.com. If you're in Melbourne under lockdown, there's only one way to survive it, right? That's by getting a, what? Slab of sample, Dos Blocos, Dos XPA. Any of the delicious booze at thedailyliquor.com delivered to your bloody door. Yes, love this. We're talking booze delivery. If you enter the code STRAYA, all caps, when you check out as well, they'll chuck in a free six-pack of the delicious Dos XPA for free. Because we're good blokes. We're giving you free beer. Would you? Look, I'm not going to do much for you in your life, but I am going to give you free beer. I can't do much more than this at this point. So there you go. If you're in Melbourne, use the code STRAYA, get some free beers, thank us later. She'll be right. STRAYA, all caps, thedailyliquor.com, free sixer. Free beer from your mate Jimmy. Legendary. All right, let's go to the time machine. 1995 NBA Finals, Game 4. Time machining, I love it. Unbelievable scenes. Great uniform matchup. You've got the red of the Rockets. You've got the blue of the Magic. I love that the Rockets, they have a usually pretty shit uniform matchup against most teams, but the two times they've been in the finals, it's been against the team with the blue uniform, and the blue and the orange slash, you know, white and yellow that they have looks great. So good stuff. All right, 47-35 Rockets, first NBA champion in history to keep the title with a sweep. The first team in NBA history to win the title without having home court advantage in any of the four playoff rounds that they had, which is crazy. And the Rockets became the first NBA team, first team in NBA history to beat four 50-win teams in a single postseason on their way to beating, on the way to winning the title, which is pretty crazy. They won a record 9 road games in the 95 playoffs as well. They beat the Jazz in 5 after trailing 2-1. They are down 3-1 against the Suns, come back again against the Suns. And Phoenix led Houston in Game 7 of that series, 51-42 at the half. Houston comes smashing back, win it 115-114 in Game 7, and then beat the Spurs in 6 in the conference finals. Also, weirdly enough, become the first team in NBA history to have lost all their home games of the series but won all the road games of a certain series. And that's absolutely fucking bonkers. That's what exactly what happened in the Spurs series. Pretty weird, pretty crazy, pretty fun. Anyway, on the flip side, Orlando, 57-25 that year. They crushed the Celtics, closed the Garden, 3-1, rather. And then they followed up with a 6-game smoking of MJ and the Bulls. Don't forget that. In the old, MJ's comeback year. It didn't matter. It didn't count. It's like, nah, it did. And Orlando beat them. And then they beat the Pacers in 7. Pretty crazy. Game 1 of this NBA Finals, though. Great matchup. You've got Hakeem. You've got Shaq. You got the young, hungry team. Everyone's been talking about Penny and Shaq for ages. Last couple of years, they love it. Here we go. And they're going up against the champions, the Houston Rockets. Game 1, famously, the Magic up 110-107 late. Nick Anderson misses 4 straight free throws. Kenny Smith hits a 3. It eventually goes to overtime. Absolute scenes. Kenny Smith also set a record of the most three-pointers in a finals game, hitting 7 in that game. Pretty crazy. Anyway, they end up getting a tip in from Hakeem at the very end. 120-118, they win. Insane. Shaq drops 33-12-7. Penny has 32-5-8 in game 2. And Houston still win 117-106. No problems. Jesus. Big ball. Sam Cassell has 31 off the bench for the Rockets in game 2. Game 3, crazy close. Houston win 106-103. Come back from down big to win this. Big shot Bob hits a 3 with 14 seconds left to get Houston up 104-100. Insane game. 20 points for Horry, 31-14-7 for Dream, 25-13-7 for Clyde Drexler. And finally, this game, game 4, they stomp them at home, kind of. Huge duel between Shaq and Hakeem. Houston win at 113-101. What do you reckon? Unbelievable. Crazy stuff. Young Shaq shoots 11 of 19 in this one, has 25-12 with 4 blocks, 3 assists, and 6 turnovers. Oh, geez. Penny has 25 points. just nothing else, really, anywhere else from the Magic. 3D, Dennis Scott had 14 points, but went 2 of 6 from downtown. Horace Grant went 5 of 12 for 11 points, 12 boards. Brian Shaw hit 5 threes off the bench for 17. This team took 31 threes as well, which is pretty crazy. And the Rockets took 27. Like, compare that to, like, the 99 or 2004 finals that we were just talking about in the last couple of weeks. That's wild. And basically, like, the amount that we'd be taking nowadays. Bonkers to think about. But anyway, I'd also like to thank Nick Anderson with his prolapsed bum for shitting himself so hard. Goes 1 of 5 for 4 points in this one, too. No good. The flip side, the champion, Rockets, Hakeem Olajuwon. 35 points, 15 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals. Shoots 15 of 30, even hits a 3. Clyde the Glide, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 15 points. Big Shot Bob, 21 points. Mario Eli, 22 points, 4 steals. Shoots 9 of 11. Sam Cassell with his big balls, 13 off the bench. Kenny the Jet had 5. Just a bit too talented. The Rockets, even though Orlando are probably the more talented team, never underestimate the heart of a champion. That's what happens, right? Isn't that right, Rudy? Shaq's 24, Hardaway's 23. The moment's just a bit too big for Orlando at the point. Rockets win their second title. Go back-to-back, baby. Not bad. And everyone's like, well, it doesn't matter. The Magic will be back. Nah. Lose to the 96 Bulls next year in the semis. Shaq bolts to LA. Penny's done later in the next season with an injury, and that's it. Whereas the Rockets get Barkley and fall short against the Jazz. I think they lose to the Sonics next year and then the Jazz the year after, and that's basically the end of their run. But still incredible, incredible couple of years for the Rockets. Just insane to think that they swept the Magic. And the Magic is still busted up by it. Horace Grant, Shaq hate it. So we should have won. It's like, you got fucking swept, idiots. I don't think so. If you win game one, maybe, but Nick Anderson shit the bed. He doesn't. Maybe they do win one game. Maybe they win another one. Who knows? But they didn't. So there you go. Swept. Let's do a NBA Australia Pro performance of the night then, shall we?
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
I mean, it's obviously Hakeem Olajuwon. Averaged 32.8 points a game, 11.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks against Shaq. Are you, like, young Shaq as well? This isn't just even, like, LA Shaq. This is young fuck you Shaq. Young, terrifyingly athletic Shaq up against Hakeem, and Hakeem pantsed him. Absolutely insane. As mentioned, this game, he has 35 points, 15 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, hits a 3, goes 15 of 30 from the floor. Absolutely incredible. Good job, Hakeem. Obviously wins finals MVP and cements himself as one of the 10, 12 best players ever. So good job, Hakeem. Spud of the night.
Spud, 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 it is Spud of the night.
I mean, historically, Nick Anderson is one of the biggest spuds of all time for his game one performance. Basically, he hits one of those free throws, the game is pretty much sealed. But nope, misses all 4. Had a great game one up until that point as well. He was 4 of 10 from deep, 9 of 18 overall, 22 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals and a block. But then, the Chernobyl-sized meltdown. And since, like, in the rest of that series, he went 4 of 13 in game 2, 4 of 14 in game 3, and just gave up the ghost in game 4, 1 of 5. Went to the line 3 more times all series. It averaged over 3 a game up until that point in the playoffs as well. So Nick Anderson spudded it up harder than any spud could ever spud. Jesus, Nick. Really sorry to bash you at home, you know, fucking 25 years later, but here we are. Jesus, that is brutal, isn't it? 4 straight free throws in a finals game. Would have won the game probably. Anyway, finally, better than Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. We're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. Isn't that right, Lonzo? Sam Cassell is better than Lonzo Ball for today. Big old big ball Sam. 2 years into his NBA career, 2-time champion. Already looked like a fucking alien too at this point. But anyway, drops 31, as I mentioned, in game 2. Gets him over the hump in Orlando. Then drops 13 and 4 in game 4 to help close it all out. And don't forget, that's 13 points and 4 assists more than Lonzo's ever had in an NBA playoff game ever in his NBA career. Because he hasn't. He's hoping they actually make it, though, this year. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? All right, cool. There you go. NBA Australia Time Machine. This has been super fun. Who knows if we do it again next week, but whatever. This has been great fun. Hope you've enjoyed it. Now, let's take a break, and then we'll go to our massive, awesome hangout with Mark Worthington, which is fucking great fun. All right, now enjoy this. I know you will. It's fucking great. Me and Mark Worthington, right after Creaky.
This is Miss Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, I promised him at the top of the show. He's the big man with a big name. He's a gold medalist, two-time Olympian, NBL champion. He played over 300 NBL games. I think he's the fifth NBL Rookie of the Year we've had on the show. I think it's five. That's fucking wild. Anyway, he is a close personal friend of Joe Ingles. It's bloody Wortho, Mark Worthington. How you going?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I'm living out west and not having to deal with anything pandemic-wise that anyone in Victoria has to go through at the moment. So happy days for us out in Western Australia.
Just rubbing salt in some wounds at this point. That's great. I mean, you've just had, out in WA, they've had a hell of a time of it in the last couple of days, right? Damian Martin retires. There's lots of fanfare about that. You've got no Rona. You get to go to the footy. Life's good.
I went to the derby on the weekend. My team, Fremantle, were once again pretty disappointing. My partner, though, plays for West Coast in AFLW, so a split allegiance there. But, big news with Damo retiring. I don't think it came as much of a surprise to anyone. He's had a fantastic career and great that he could be recognised with the Defensive Player of the Year trophy named after him as well, which is well-deserved.
Yeah, that was really cool. And it was amazing to see the NBL make a decision in about 2.5 hours. That was.
I reckon they made a decision about 2 years ago for this moment. So,
good on him.
I reckon it's the right decision. And, obviously he'll go down as one of the greats of the game, not only for what he's done defensively, but his captaining role in probably the most successful club in NBL history, which is the Perth Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty crazy because we lived overseas. We lived in America for, 6 years, and I had seen Damo before I left, and then by the time we got back, I went and saw a Wildcats game here in Melbourne this year to catch my best friend Nick Kay in action, and was amazed that Damo's effort had not dipped one fucking iota in about 10 years. It was absolutely terrifying. Like, his arms are just doing the fucking Damo arm thing, just nonstop. Just all action all the time, and he was unstoppable. It was awesome. So well played to him.
Well, that's Damo, and I think Damo would even say to himself, if he didn't do that, he wouldn't be that good of a basketball player. Like, he had to be that defensive nightmare every time he stepped on the court. And it was funny, always playing against Damo, and you get an import point guard in, and every year you'd be like, you better be ready, motherfucker, because someone's going to come knocking on your front door and his name's Damian Martin. And if you can't handle him, then we've got no shot this year. And every input says, we'll be fine. We'll be right. Sure enough, Damo would fucking just lock him up. And then you walk off the game, they'll be like, fucking hell. And I was like, well, we warned you. Like, you knew that was going to happen, And very few have been able to walk in and be able to get a one up on Damo, but very rarely has anyone got two good games, especially in front of the Red Army in Perth playing against Damian Martin.
Love it. Well, let's talk about Mark Worthington for a second. This is pretty weird because you are in WA, you grew up in Bunbury, you love the Wildcats growing up, right? Andrew Vlahoff's your guy.
Yeah, Vlahoff was my guy. I was a Wildcats man and then never, ever fucking played for him.
That was my next question. Are you shattered that you never played for them?
Well, I think it's pretty well known now that there was a couple opportunities for me to play for the Wildcats. And one was going to come to fruition right towards the end of my career. But Rob Beveridge got sacked as the coach. And Bevo and I had agreed that I was coming to Perth at that point, and then it was only a matter of days later that he got fired. So I could have been a cat to finish off my career. I wouldn't say that I'm shattered. I'm very, very fortunate to have the experience that I had. going full circle, I was the Taipans' first ever development player at the age of 17.
Yeah.
And to finish my career there was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But obviously to play my very, very last game at REC Arena in Perth with a standing ovation and all that was a very, very special moment, not only for my friends and my family that were in the crowd, but for myself personally against the one team that probably a little bit maligned throughout my career, a bit of a love-hate relationship. The fact that I was from WA and the fact that I never played for the Wildcats, it was a pretty cool moment to walk off the court one last time in Perth.
It's pretty awesome, isn't it? The idea, though, we'll get to this down the track, but I mean, how much do you reckon you actually had left in the tank at that point? Because your shoulder was all fucked up as well, and it would seem like, you know, you were pretty happy with the decision to call it quits.
Yeah, look, I was still playing decent basketball at that stage, but there's probably two trains of thought. A was the shoulder. It was the second shoulder reconstruction. And I had a lot of trouble coming back from the first one. I remember coming back from Serbia, having shoulder recon, and playing for the Melbourne Tigers, and I struggled that year. I couldn't sleep on my shoulder that entire season, and that was the level of pain that I was going through just because I came back probably a little bit too quickly. The second one is, preseasons are a motherfucker. Like, if you didn't have to do preseason, I think I'd be all right. But the fact that I had lost the enjoyment of preseason, I just didn't want to go through that, plus the rehab again. And I could go out pretty much on my own terms at that stage, still playing decent basketball, still being a valuable member of an NBL team. I did have a couple teams reach out to me just in hope that I'd come back for one more season and probably be more of a leader coming off the bench. But I was a bit of an egotistical bastard as well, and I couldn't see myself coming off the bench. I think I only did it for maybe 8 games my entire career. And if I was coming back to play, I was coming back to get a starting spot off someone. And that's probably where I knew that it was time for me just to walk away from the game because I'd done way more than what I could ever dreamed of as a kid.
Yeah. I mean, to take it back to when you were a kid, I mean, growing up in Bunbury, I mean, your family's been involved with hoops forever over there as well. What was the basketball culture like there growing up? I mean, Cam Glidden obviously comes from Bunbury too, but what was it like and what's it like now?
Well, growing up, football was still number one. And I remember being at school, and at school at lunch and recess, I would be the only kid sort of shooting hoops because that's what I loved doing. And still probably to this day, I'd say football probably has a little bit of an edge, but it started being a change in the guard with as far as basketball becoming a more popular and more dominant sport here in the Southwest. I'm fortunate that I've picked up a role as the coach of the State League team now and coaching Bunbury, which has been something pretty cool to come back and coach a team that my dad has coached, to coach a team that both my brother and I had played for, to coach a club that my mum had coached the women and my sister had played in the women's as well. So we've been part of the Slammers DNA for a long period of time. So to be back in it now and watching it and growing it from the inside is a pretty cool moment for me to come back and give back to a club that gave me so much as a junior.
That's awesome. I mean, that's also why I have so many Ballarat Miners on the NBA Australia. It just makes sense. I'm giving back to the team that I never played for. But moving on from there, I mean, I still remember like being a massive hoops head growing up. You were one of the sort of the next generation Aussie players who went to college in the States and you know, played in the NCAA and whatnot. There's, you know, this sort of big rush around the start of the thousands of like you, Bogey and Co. Yeah. And you went to Metro State Uni up in Denver. And
yeah.
Turns out that's got a massive, massive, massive long history of Aussies coming to play for them. Dave Barlow, Drew Williamson, Luke Kendall, Wags, Nick Kay, my best mate, my other best mate, yeah. Mitch McCarron. Tom Garrett's there now, I think, isn't he?
Yep, yep.
I think I remember that, yeah. What was that like sort of going – it's almost into the unknown because not many Aussies had really done it before. Like the early thousands, college life, what was it like?
Well, I remember the whole recruiting process where they called my parents' phone, and I think it was about 4 a.m. in the morning because they didn't understand the fucking time difference. And I think my dad hung up on the coach the first 3 times and told him, stop fucking calling this number. And then after that, we finally started talking and they said, have you ever thought about going to college? And at that point, I hadn't at all. Like I got through year 12 and I was a decent student without having to study too much. So it wasn't like school was, I hated school. And so when the opportunity came and after talking to my parents, I decided to give it a go. I knew that Mike Dunlap had coached the Adelaide 36ers. So I knew that he was familiar with the NBL and the Australian style. I also found out, you know, that there'd been a few Australians had gone through that path before, whether it was Lee Barlow, who was no relation to David Barlow.
Played for the Bullets a million years ago.
Yeah, Shane Armett. There was a few Australians that had already gone through that process. And so when it came down to it, I ended up teaming with guys like Luke Kendall, who is still one of my best mates today, and we played 3 years of college together. Daniel George was there at the time. Got to play with Andrew Harms and Drew Williamson. And then it was really cool to see that next crop of kids come through, which was, you know, the Wagstaffs, the Kays, the McCarrans. Even Sunday Deck was there for a bit as well. So Metro State has had a really cool imprint into the NBL. Who knows what will happen from here? I think because the college has just become that more popular and we've got a lot more exposure now, we'll see a lot more kids going to Division One schools. But the pretty cool thing was that our Division Two school could beat majority of the Division One schools, and a lot of the Division One schools knew it, and they didn't want to play us in the preseason games. They didn't want to play us in the open schedule because it would look bad to lose to a Division Two school. But we had that much talent from all around the world that we were, and we're really well coached as well, might add, by Dunlap, that we knew that we could beat most people that we walked onto the court with.
Yeah. Was it also cool being in Colorado? I mean, did you get to do cool, like, outdoorsy shit? I've been there a couple of times. It is amazing up there.
It is really, really cool. And no, I didn't, because I fucking hate the snow. I hate the snow.
Nice.
I've lived a lot in the snow and I hate the snow, I must admit. Give me the beach any day of the week over snow and warm. I'll take warm weather. And people try to get me into snowboarding and into skiing and all that. And you know what? I more often than not look like an octopus setting up a deck chair than looking like someone that's comfortable on top of snow. And I'd much rather be warm as well instead of freezing. So I can't say that I probably expanded too much outside of playing basketball and living that college lifestyle that we did.
Yeah, I mean, I fucked up my foot for the first time, which it's fucked up at the moment, actually, in the day before getting to Colorado in Utah hiking, and then, limped around Denver for a couple of days one time, and then another trip. Got banned from a golf course in Breckenridge, so good times. Love Colorado.
Well done.
It's pretty good, man. It's what we do here at NBA Australia. I mean, how did your game develop then, like being there? Like you end up being, what, Div 2 Player of the Year? At one point, which is pretty amazing. Did you sort of like just go through the years of college and just go, holy shit, I can't believe how much better I've gotten because of this? Or was it something that you probably, the development would have happened anyway? What do you reckon?
It was definitely a process. So year one, obviously, you know, I'd made Australian camps coming out of state teams and stuff like that. I was a development player with the Taipans. So I thought I was pretty much ready to jump in straight away. Needless to say, I wasn't. And the one thing about American culture is you've got to pay your dues, and it doesn't matter where you come from and what you do. I remember I think I started maybe 5 or 6 games that season, and the rest were coming off the bench. I was one of the I think there was only 7 or 8 of us that played in the championship game in my freshman year. So that was pretty cool that I got to be able to do that. But as far as I wouldn't say I was an integral part of the team the first year, probably even 2 years. Year three, I still came off the bench in year three. And we had a great season. We fell short. I think we shot something like 14% in the final four game and lost by a point on the buzzer. We had a winning margin of around 35 points a game that season. And I think our end of record was 32-3. And so to lose by 1 point shooting 14%, we were pretty devastated. And then my senior year is sort of when my game just took off to another level. And I think Dunlap figured out how to utilize me. Depending on who matched up on me, decided if I was a three man or a four man. And if it was a four man, then I'd go out to the perimeter. And if it was a three man, then I'd go into the post. And I think that carried over into my first season with the Sydney Kings, and Gorge played me as a three man, but I was probably posting up more as a three man than anyone else in the league at that stage as a rookie. So, my development was, It was a slow burn, to say the least. But once I got to that senior year of my career, I walked onto the court every time thinking, oh, I was the best player on the court, and nice. That I couldn't be stopped. And, it was a far cry from the year before, when I knew I was just a part in the puzzle to being the guy. And I think, Mitch and Nick probably went through the same sort of experience through their years in college.
Yeah.
And it was pretty cool that they got to share that experience together going through.
Yeah. I mean, you playing for Coach Dunlap as well, who, as you mentioned, coached the 36ers in the 90s, which is weird to think about. And then did you ever get on the old dog and bone when he was Coach of Charlotte there for a bit and go, hey, Coach, come on, what do you reckon? Hey.
Well, when he was still coaching Charlotte, I was still playing. So I never, yeah. He was in there, and he was in a high pressure situation. I did end up going to be one of his assistant coaches at LMU.
Yep.
Once my career was done, so which was pretty cool. And LMU was the school that Damian Martin, go full circle, went to with Matty Knight as well. Hey. So that was a pretty cool experience. But I've definitely talked to Dunlap about his time in Charlotte and the experiences, and some are good, some are bad. And I think that's, when you're an NBA coach and you have to deal with so many egos and attitudes, it'd become a bit of a grind after a while.
There you go. That's why he should have brought you over.
Yeah, look, nah, I'll be right.
Nice one. But either way, you do get, after college, you come home, join a Kings team that is – like mid-thousands Kings, like they're on top of the NBL, crushing it. What was it like playing in that environment, especially with Gorge as well?
Gorge and Dunlap are good friends. So there was a lot of similarities between their coaching and the way that they went about business. I think one of the reasons that both of them enjoyed me as a player was because I was one of those guys that just did all the hard work and was still able to score a few points here and there. And Gorge... when I came out of college, the truth be told, because the Taipans had shown some faith in me as a 17-year-old, I was like, all right, well, if the Taipans throw me an offer, it doesn't matter what it is, I will go to Cairns. Alan Black was the coach at the time, and Alan Black had told me that there wasn't a spot for me on his roster, and he didn't think that I was an NBL player. And I had Gorgon, who was coming off 3 championships at the Kings, saying, I think you're our starting three man. So I was like, well, that's – and to be fair, the Perth Wildcats made an offer as well, and I believe Mike Ellis was coaching at the time. But when I saw Gorge, I knew that if I wanted to continue to develop my game, that was the direction that I needed to head in. After Cairns had blatantly said that I wasn't good enough to play in the NBL. So I also put a target on Cairns' back every time I played them, funnily enough, until I went to the Taipans. So it was just the right decision for me at the time. It made so much sense, and Gorge definitely helped from my year one to my fourth year at the Dragons. I developed so much and became one of the guys in the NBL, and that's because Gorge had put so much work into me to get me to where I need to be. And that first year was definitely a lot of lessons learned about becoming a pro for the first time. But that being said, he had a lot of time. We butted heads from time to time, but he is one of the best coaches I've ever had. And it's really good to see him back in the NBL with the Hawks this season as well.
Yeah. That was also the first of the, what, three teams that went bust on you?
Yeah. Fuck, let's talk about that. So there was the Sydney...
it's amazing. It is like, it's legitimately incredible that you were part of three teams that went bust, like almost one after the other.
See, this is also a fun fact, is I remember I was one of the better players at the Sydney Kings when, you know, firepower came in, and, you know, we went through so much shit that year with the firepower in the last season of the Kings. Like, people weren't getting paid. Our super wasn't getting paid. And yet that team showed up, and we should have won a championship.
Yep.
Had Jason Smith not broken his hand and Dante Draper tore his hamstring in game three, but still managed to play. Both of those guys still managed to play. And we went to five games with Melbourne Tigers, and a good mate of mine, Chris Anstey, was just too good. He was at the peak of the NBL at that stage. He was the best player in the competition. He was just too much for us, making incredible shots. But I left Sydney, and then I start, you know, all these fucking nerds that write shit that have no idea, saying, oh, Worthington's made the Kings go bust. I'm like, motherfuckers, if you knew what I was on, you'd know that I've walked out of Sydney in fucking debt. Like, I was one of the lowest paid fucking players in Sydney at that stage. And so that happened with the Sydney Kings, and with Tim Johnson, who's like legitimately one of the biggest fuckheads you've ever met, and firepower at that stage. Then you go to the South Dragons, which was just an unfortunate circumstances. And I hope there is a book written about what happened after that season in the NBL as far as management goes.
Yeah.
Of what was to be, what was proposed, and what was eventually happened. Because it's a real shame. And I'm sure all those details will come out one day, but it's a real shame that we don't have people like Mark Cow and Ruffy Jaminda still in the competition as owners of the South Dragons, because that was a fantastic organization. So well run, so ahead of the time. Obviously, they'd gone from last place and brought in people and winning a championship, which was just unfortunate. And then the last one was the whole Gold Coast experiment. And if you'd been on the Gold Coast, the only reason that the Gold Coast Suns are still alive and relevant is because the AFL pumps that much money into them. Like, it is not a destination for a sports team whatsoever. And you only have to live there for a month to understand why. There is no real support. The Titans have been terrible forever and a day in the NRL.
Yep.
The Suns have been propped up by the AFL. I also was able to go through the whole Melbourne Tigers to Melbourne United scheme as well, and be plastered as the face of that, only to be fired a year later after being the MVP of that team. So I've lived through a lot of shit, and people have asked if I would write a book about my experience in the NBL. And to be honest with you, there is a lot of shit that I've been through, but at the same time, there's been so much good stuff as well.
Yeah.
That seems to be left behind because everyone just thinks of the three teams that have no longer, that dissolved while I was there, or the changeover from the Melbourne Tigers to Melbourne United. But
yeah,
there's been so much good shit along the way as well.
I mean, the fact that you won the title in 2009 with the Dragons, and Gorge was the coach again, right? And you've got Jingles there. It's just one of the strangest chapters in NBL history. Like, it's absolutely fucking bonkers. Like, it's the fact that you've lived through all this is absolutely wild to me. So I think that's really cool and bizarre. I mean, so do you sort of look back on it all just like with a sort of wry smile and go, dude, what the fuck was that?
I was having a conversation with someone, an ex-NBL player, yesterday. And talking about the salaries that some of the players are getting today. And I'm like, fuck, I played in the wrong era. Like, Jesus Christ, he's got offered that much money, you know. And so that's like sounding like a bitter old man almost to a degree, but that's probably shows the growth of the NBL. And I think when I walked into the NBL and when I left being the president of the Players Association, I always wanted to leave on better terms, and no doubt the NBL is a much, much better place today than what it was when I walked into it. And we can all be upset about what we didn't get as players back then or what we had to go through. But the chance is, if I could do it all over again, I would do it exactly the same way, because if I put my mind to it, I was just a kid from Bunbury that was probably told multiple times that I wasn't good enough, that I didn't make the under-16 WA country state team, which means you have to be pretty fucking shit to not make that team. And then to go on and have a 300-plus game NBL career with championships and awards along the way, it's pretty surreal.
Yeah. I mean, and you also did a couple of stints in Europe, stints in Puerto Rico, and you'd sort of always come back to Australia. Like, was it weird sort of doing the sort of seeing the culture shifts as well when you'd sort of go to Germany, come back, Serbia, come back, Puerto Rico, come back? Was that kind of weird, kind of cool?
It was really cool. It was cool for a number of reasons. First, the Germany stint was off the back of winning with the South Dragons and then going to Germany, joining a team, and then from fifth place winning another championship. So that was a really cool 6 months of my life. I really loved Germany. I tried to go back to that team, but they ended up replacing me with a guy called PJ Tucker. I'm not sure if you've heard of him. In hindsight, probably a good deal for them. I almost went back to Frankfurt, which was a team that we beat in the final the year that I was there. Just didn't eventuate in the end. My year in Serbia, mixed emotions on that one. Fantastic people that I met there. I've got some lifelong friends that live in Serbia. The club did me dirty, and that was where I had my first shoulder reconstruction, which was against Aaron Baines and Union Olympia, and we were both going for a rebound. And Bainesy had pulled on my shoulder and pretty much ripped everything in it. So that's where the downfall of my first shoulder recon came from. I ended up having crepes and beers with Bainesy the very next day, and then about 3 months later, he gets shipped off to the San Antonio Spurs, which was pretty cool as well. And he's just had an unbelievable career from where he started to where he is now. It's so freaking cool to watch from afar. But yeah, and then Puerto Rico is just like it was like the G League, I guess.
Yeah.
It was one-on-one basketball. You get told off for passing to a local, even if you're triple-teamed. It was just madness. I got fired from my first club because I wasn't black. That is a true story. They were like, we want someone that's black and athletic, and you're white and unathletic, so we're going to move on you. And I was like, okay. And then I got picked up by another club whose owner had a bread store, but I found out later had like the biggest drug cartel in Puerto Rico.
Checks out.
And like, it was like a race to the bank once you got your checks to see who could get their cash first. Otherwise you didn't get your cash. So it was just madness rolled up into one. And I think about the stories of my time in Puerto Rico. I was there when Tractor Trailer passed away. I had dinner with him and a few other imports 2 nights before, which was crazy that we'd all had dinner 2 nights before, and then he passed away 2 nights later in his sleep. And being at his funeral in Puerto Rico was something else as well. So crazy times in Puerto Rico, to say the least. But the one thing I did, I loved playing in Australia. I love coming home just because I've been fortunate enough to travel around the world and see a lot. And I just don't think we understand how fortunate we are in Australia, that we live in such an amazing country. that we've got so many more benefits than a lot of other countries. Yes, we're a long, long way away from, you know, Europe and the States and all that, but we've got so much greatness in our backyard that we don't even realize. And that's probably one of the main reasons I always end up coming home, because I just love Australia.
That's awesome. And I don't feel like people quite understand how insane Puerto Rico is, right? Like, it's not very big and it's fucking wild and it's awesome. And to actually have, you know, had a couple of stints there, that's absolutely amazing. And I'm
Can I tell you one story? A 100% true story. So my first team was Guanabo Mets, and I had a driver, and I don't understand why, but I had a driver, and we'd go to these games, and my driver was taking me to play against Quebradillas, which ended up being my second team, which was on the other side of the island. Now, from one side of the island to the other, it just takes a bit over 2 hours. And so we drive to the game, and the driver says, look, if we go 20 minutes further down south, there's pretty much the best, what's it called? Like the wine stuff in Puerto Rico. And I was like, sure. So he goes and gets it after the game. He gets like six bottles of red, six bottles of white. I get two and two. And we're driving back home, and the driver goes, can I have some of this like wine on the way home? I'm like, sure. You do what you got to do. So I'm sitting in the passenger seat. He's sitting in the driver's seat, and we're both having a drink. We get pulled up by a cop, because a cop obviously sees that the driver's having a drink behind the wheel.
Sure.
And so he's like, let me handle this. I'm like, well, fuck, I'm not going to handle it. He's like, I can't even speak the language, so go ahead. So the police officer comes down and starts speaking in Spanish, you know, going up. My driver pulls his gun out and points it at the cop. And I'm like, what the fuck? The cop's like, okay, have a good night. And like walks off. And I'm like, what the fuck was that? He's like, oh, I can't afford to get a fine. And, you know, and I'm just like, what the fuck? And so that is an absolute true story, that my driver pulled a gun on a cop. Yeah.
Hey, man, if you can't afford the fine, why the fuck not, I guess.
My teammates used to walk into the locker room and show, like, their guns to one another. Like, I was, like, the only person in my team that didn't have a gun. And they're all like, check out my piece, you know. Do you want to hold it? Do you want to, you know? And I'm like, no.
No thanks, like, Gilbert Arenas. Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. It was just a different experience.
Wow. That's wild. I mean, you end up, as you mentioned, you finish up in Cairns, go full circle. After you go through the Tigers United sort of changeover, and as you mentioned, you're the MVP of United, and then come to the table with a contract, you're like, no, I'm good. What was actually like finishing up your career in Cairns? Like, you've got a bunch of young dudes like Mitch McCarron, Glids, all friends of the show, in fact, Sean Prawn Bruce. I think you would have just missed Waxy Walker, another friend of NBA Australia, but you would have played with him in Melbourne, though, I think.
At Melbourne, yeah, I did.
In fact, I'm pretty sure NBA Australia has now just become my attempt to recreate the Taipans roster from about 2016. But anyway, it must have been a pretty cool change of scenery, at least, to get up to Cairns after Melbourne, right?
Yeah, it was. It was. It's a different environment and different lifestyle. Like I said, I enjoyed the sun. Those summers were fucking brutal, though. You just sweat your ass off sitting down waiting for a game, try and relax before a game, and it's just that hot up in Cairns. And Aaron Fearn was a really, really good coach. I didn't understand how good of a coach he was, but X's and O's wise, he was spectacular as a coach. And he got those teams, you know, to far exceed their expectations of what the competition is. The Taipans are always going to be the little brother to everyone in the competition. And Fernie got them to two grand finals, semi-final in my last year versus the eventual champions, the Wildcats. They just always punched above their weight, and they played great team basketball. There was no real standout players. outside of, you know, probably Scotty Wilbekin, Torrey Craig didn't probably get enough recognition for what he did for his time in Cairns. So at the end of the day, it was pretty cool to end my career there. And, you know, they're very, very passionate up in Cairns, that Orange Army. They love their team. They love hoops. They love coming to the games and supporting their team. And, you know, it was a pretty fitting way for me to finish my career. Having been there as a 17-year-old, walking into Ormulla Street, you know, the fish tank where they train for the first time, and then, you know, having my last few years being at the same exact same venue almost 16, 17 years later, doing the exact same thing was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, what was your first thought after you sort of decided that you're going to retire? Like, what the fuck do I do now? Like, were you just like happy? Were you like, cool, no more fucking pre-seasons? Was there a sort of plan behind it?
I probably had finished doing the pre-season, and I knew in my own heart of hearts that this was probably going to be my last season. And so the events that led up to the announcement was we were playing the Illawarra Hawks. I'd been in an accident with Jared Weeks at training, and I'd done my shoulder, and I think I'd missed two games or missed a game. I'd played a game the night before. I forget where we played, and then we'd play in Illawarra on a back-to-back. And I was sitting in the locker room, and I'd always get to the game roughly 2.5 hours, 3 hours before the game, and just go through my routine. I usually shot before everyone else. I'd have an ice bath before the game because I was old, decrepit fuck at that stage, and I needed to get through games. And I was going through my routine. I was just sitting in my locker, and I messaged the media manager at the time, and I just said, "Can I have a chat with you?" And she came down to the locker room, and it was just myself and her in the locker room. And I just said, "I'm going to announce my retirement after the game." And I sort of took her by surprise, and she said, "Well, how do you want to do it?" And I said, "If we lose, I'll do it in the press conference. If we win, I'll do it on Fox if they allow me to." And we won the game, and they brought me up just thinking that I'd just been, you know, handpicked to go up and have the chat after the game. And then I announced my retirement after that, and that was all she wrote.
You dropped the hammer.
Crazy. Yeah.
Nice one. I mean, was it like a relief almost?
I wouldn't say it was a relief. I think in hindsight, I was probably dealing with a little bit of anxiety and depression at that stage of my life. I didn't really realize it then. I sort of recognize it now, and that's the field of work that I work in now, is working in mental health. To try and, you know, help people that went through similar situations to what I went through. And I don't think it was a weight off my shoulders, because I knew there was still so much to be done that season. And it wasn't until really maybe 2 months after the season that it finally sunk in, you know, what was happening. And, you know, I think I was going in for my shoulder recon at that stage, and I just knew, yep, you know, that my life probably wouldn't be the same again. And, you know, I think to a degree you miss a lot of the small things about being a player. You miss being around your mates on a day-to-day basis, working towards something and sacrificing yourself towards a purpose. And I went through probably a range of emotions post my career. Some good, some bad. And, you know, it was probably the right time when I look at how the NBL's progressed that I did retire, probably at the right stage of my career.
Hmm. Nice. I mean, you were a two-time Olympian as well. Like, I feel like we're almost burying a bit of the lead here. Like, you're a fucking gun. Like, I feel like we spent a bunch of time on, you know, your retirement and, the fun shit that you did in Puerto Rico. But at the same time, 2008, 2012, Beijing and London, you would have gone up against the USA twice, wouldn't you?
I played against them four times.
Fucking hell.
So
not bad. Speaking of Kobe, he went crazy against Oz twice as well, didn't he?
Well, it was really, really the London game that he went nuts in the last quarter and quarter and a bit, and hitting the six threes, and I think in something like 14 minutes or something like that. So, it was definitely a part of that. We had played our asses off to that stage, and it was Kobe and Kobe alone that got them above us at that stage. Paddy was having a fantastic game.
Yeah.
Joe was having a fantastic game. Our scout was really good. Brett was doing a fantastic job of sort of picking them apart as well on the offensive end, and knowing where we could get our scores from. And Kobe was just fucking incredible that game. I remember it, and even when on a fast break and I was running out to close him out, and I felt like I couldn't have run any harder at him, and he still managed to drain it right in front of the Team USA bench. And, you know, at that point, you knew as soon as he shot it, you're like, fuck, that's going in. Like, he was just one of those players that once he caught fire, there was not much anyone could do to stop him.
What were those Olympic teams like to be a part of? Because obviously it's basically looked at as like the golden generation, and we're sort of hitting this part now where we're hoping to continue it on. Like, but 08 and 12 were like really sort of the ones where a lot of the groundwork was built in for the Boomers and co. So I don't know, what was it like?
It was really cool. Like 08, we walked in as a really, really young team, and people would always say to us, like, you go to one Olympics, you're really, really fortunate. You go to two, you're unbelievably fortunate. And so someone like Dave Anderson, who's been to four, it's just incredible and what he's been able to do over a period of time. But we walked in 08, and a lot of us were going to the Olympics for the first time. We were a very young team, and we battled, but it sort of did lay the groundwork to what we have towards us now. And all those young guys are now the senior guys in the team, be it Paddy, be it Joe, be it Bainesy, and the list goes on, and even Delhi, you know. Delhi wasn't there in 08, but he was there in 12, and for those guys to be playing for that long now and to be able to go through this as a group speaks volumes to A, how much they love playing for their country, and B, that they've had pretty decent support across the board for a number of years now. Gorge was fantastic in putting that team chemistry together. I think Brett carried that on and had a different way of going about his business, but was really personable with the guys and had built great relationships, whether it be with, you know, Matty Nielsen down to Paddy and across the board. And then Andre implemented his system, and, you know, they were just systematic in the last couple of years and what they were able to do offensively to get him into a position to get a medal. Just to fall a little bit short is heartbreaking, either as a former Boomer. Like, it was tough to watch those games because I knew how much it meant to these guys. And now to see Brett come back into the fold, I'm really interested to see where the dynamic of the group goes, and if we can bring our top talent together, add people like Ben Simmons into the fold, then the sky is really the limits for the Boomers coming up. And I know USA will put back a team that will be a little bit more impressive than what they've shown the last World Champs. Serbia will always be around the mark with the way and the style that they play in. Spain will always be there. Argentina will always be there. But I really think it's Australia's time to shine. And, man, I'm disappointed. The Olympics would have been starting tomorrow had it been on, I think. But we have to wait one more year to see if we can get that medal for the boys.
Well, it gives us another year to convince Matisse Thybulle to play for Aussie. And away we go.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good. And I'm pretty sure if we want him to get him, he's at the right place in Philly to try and convert him back to an Australian.
Yeah, we're just going to keep Brett there for another year in Philly. So, speaking of which, let's do a quick rapid fire. We'll just smash through a bunch of these. Mark Worthington, favorite NBA team?
Dallas Mavericks.
Oh, nice one. Is that Dirk related?
It is Dirk related, but I was a fan back in the Triple J era, so that's where it started. I was just lucky that Dirk went there, and now Luke is there as well.
Yeah, long-term NBA Australia listeners know how much I love those horrible early, well, mid-90s Triple J Mavs. I remember there was a one-on-one cover, the old Australian basketball magazine that had the Triple J.
I know exactly which one you're talking about.
Absolutely amazing. Still lives on in my memory forever. Favorite NBA player?
LeBron.
Nice. Favorite NBL city to play against?
Adelaide.
Ooh, nice one. That's a cool one. What was the best city rivalry that you got to be a part of in the NBL?
Kings Tigers.
Ooh, nice one. NBL player you most had beef with on the court?
Sean Redditch.
Nice. Player in the NBL you reckon you most would have liked to have dunked on throughout your career?
Oh, dunked on? Mate, I never got above the rim.
Exactly. I mean, this is the idea. In an ideal situation.
Ideal situation. Oh, Anstey.
Nice. Good call.
No. And had I played in the same era, Simon Dwight.
Oh, good call. Who was the best player you ever guarded in the NBL?
I think it would have been Chris.
Yep. Best player
Chris,
you played with?
Chris Anstey for sure.
Yep. Best player you played with?
Donta Smith.
Ooh, good call. That was on the Dragons, right?
Yeah.
Nice. How many times did you rub Gorge's scone?
Enough for him to go bald. I didn't know if that was from Luke Kendall and I at Sydney or me rubbing his scone, but definitely a lot of times.
Love it. Do you have an all-time favorite NBA jersey?
I had the Nowitzki jersey for a long period of time, so that's my favorite.
All right, we've got the NBA starting back at the end of next week as well. Who do you like for the title?
I think the Lakers will play the Clippers in the final, and I think the Lakers will get it done this year.
Nice one. A couple of year-nows as well to finish it off. Do you reckon Giannis Antetokounmpo can win MVP and Defensive Player of the Year? Yeah, nah.
Nah.
Ooh, tough scenes. In your face, Greek freak. Who do you reckon wins Defensive Player of the Year then?
I don't know. I'm not sure, but I saw the stats the other day, and technically on the steals and blocks front, James Harden's just as good as Giannis. So if that's the case, then I can't pick Giannis as Defensive Player of the Year.
I love it. Were you next year? Nah. Were you pissed that you never actually got drafted into like 05? Yeah, nah.
Nah.
I mean, Euro Slokar did, so I'd be pissed. But at the same time, 05, if you look back at it, it's like a weirdly deep draft as well. There's like just the second round is littered with long time NBA players, and there's like about 15, 20 non drafted blokes, I think, who ended up making the league as well.
So, well, Divi 2 wasn't a big thing back then. Yep. So. Bogut won Player of the Year in Division 1. I won Player of the Year in Division 2, but no one in Division 2 even got a look in by the NBA teams. It wasn't until a year or two afterwards that teams start paying attention to it. So it is what it is.
Did you ever think you could have actually made it in the NBA if you were given a shot a couple of years later? Yeah, no?
Yeah.
Nice. Would you have had a team that you reckon you would have suited around that time?
Left field, Washington Wizards.
Ooh. So what, the Gilbert Arenas, Karen Butler, Antoine Jamison sort of era?
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting. And finally, trying out for AFL. I mean, how close was that to actually happening? How do I pose this as a yeah, nah? Could you have actually made the AFL, do you reckon? Yeah, nah.
I get posed this question a lot of times. I'd say, yeah, I could have made the AFL if I'd started much earlier in my career. But when I tried out as a 29-year-old, I reckon it's a little bit difficult. But it was AFL. It was West Coast that initiated it, only to tell me that I was too old, which they knew straight away.
Yep.
So I think it was a bit of a publicity stunt from West Coast and at the end of the day.
You're basically a taller Hugh Greenwood at this point.
I'll say yeah to that, but Huey's doing a fantastic job, and so happy for him up on the Gold Coast and what he's been able to do as well. He was a gun basketball player. It was a massive loss for the NBL to lose him, but I'm really, really happy for Hugh and what he's been able to do as an AFL player.
He was on the show about a month ago, and I've had him in my Supercoach team all season, and he has not disappointed me, so... Big props to Hugh. Mark Worthington, this has been fucking legendary having you on the show. Appreciate it. This has been awesome. Thanks for coming on, man.
No worries, mate. Thank you.
Hey, this is Isaac Humphries, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right. How good was that? I don't know if I've laughed so much through a NBA Australia chat. That was fucking great. Massive thanks to Mark Worthington, Wortho, for coming on the show. That was great fun. Wanted to chat to him for ages, so it was very, very cool to have him on, especially if he's the last, you know, sort of big special guest that we have on before we get right back into the daily swing of things as of probably next week. So should be good. All right, speaking of which, we'll be back next week with all the usual dumbassery. We'll do another Wednesday show, then we might even go daily from there. Who knows? We'll figure it out, but we will be back on Friday as well with some more Yeah Nahs. YouTube, Facebook, all that good stuff. Either way, make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Facey, IG. We're all over the socials all the time. Get around NBAAustralia.com and go buy some merch. We do have hoodies and a couple of t-shirts and a couple of extra surprises at the end of this week for you. So NBAAustralia.com/shop and go buy a hoodie, stubby holder, t-shirt. And meanwhile, as well, if you're especially in Melbourne... lockdown, go to thedailyliquor.com, enter the code STRAYA, and get a free six-pack on me. All it is, all caps, STRAYA, thedailyliquor.com, you'll be laughing. Unreal shit. So there you go. Get around them. Support those dudes who support us. They're fucking great. The beers are delicious. Thedailyliquor.com. Check us a rating review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, whatever app you use on your Android phone, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, all that good shit. It helps out heaps. Come on, man. Help us out. A big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their album, Running Out of Time, is out now. It's awesome. Also, big thanks to Joshua De La Renta's Fascinated, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Should I, Green, 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 and Dozers. All the tunes you hear throughout NBA Australia. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp, Facey, Triple J on Earth. Remember, NBA Australia supports Australian bands. Support them while you can at the moment. They can't play gigs. Help them out, would you? Go buy some of their merch and some of their shit. All right, so... massive thanks to Wortho. That was great. Go follow him on Twitter. He's a good time. And we'll close out today's show with a brand new deli review. And deli's going to review Frozen for you. Because why the fuck not? All right. We'll catch you next week, you dickheads. We'll catch you on Friday, actually, if you're going to watch some Yeah Nahs. This is NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves, would you? And later, ho. Slide! Oi, 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 how the fuck are you? It's your old mate Deli over here, just swinging by from the latest lockdown pop culture view, eh? And look, I hope all yous are all staying safe, eh? Especially back home in Australia, and those blokes still under lockdown there in Melbourne's and stuff. But look, just remember what Deli says. Don't be a fucking dickhead. Wear a mask. And here's to getting on the beers soon, eh? So, yeah, sick as. Righto, like, stuff here's not too bad at the moment. There's all that fucking talk of getting all of us loser teams to a shitty bubble in Chicago, which was fucked, because there's no fucking Pirates of the Caribbean or fucking Space Mountain or even fucking Splash Mountain in fucking Chicago. But, look, I don't know what's going on. Me and my best mate Dunno haven't heard nothing from the Cavs, so we're just like, all right, sit tight, sick, okay. I mean, I started my own podcast and everything. And because I've always been good at, like, naming shit, it's called the Deli Podcast. It's fucking sick as too. I just like sit down with cool fuckers I like over the computer and talk to them, eh? And like, just Just you wait for the episode where Dono comes in all stoned and buzzing from an epic Fortnite and bong sesh. It's pretty sick as. And the episode where I get my best mate Plugger on is going to be fucking sick too. But yeah, so we're all still in lockdown here too. Like, Cleveland's fucked. And we've got, like, the little bloke here anyway. So we'll just stay put till we're good. But, I mean, that also cuts down on my old pop culture stuff. So I've got to tell you, shit took a bit of a turn for the worse this week. Because, like, the missus laid down the law, right? She's all like, righto, dickheads. It's Saturday night. I want to watch something I like. Not fucking Fast and the Furious 6 again, you dickheads. And because she's, like, super aggro and stuff, I was like, oh, sure thing, hey. Cheers, as. And she's like, right, sit down. We're watching Frozen. And I'm like, oh, fuck, here we go. But you know what? I've got to tell you, it wasn't that half fucking bad. I mean, sure, Donna spent, like, the last week fucking wandering around the house singing, let it go, let it fucking go, like a mad dog and shit. But yeah, I mean, otherwise, it was fine. Like, well, I don't really know what the fuck it was about. Like, a princess who's all fucked up and another one who's chill as fuck. And there's, like, a fucking snowman and a reindeer and a bloke. Yeah. Look, it's actually a bit hard to break down for her because I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's like, oh, shit, we've got to save the town or something and this chick's going to freeze everything, but we better sort this out. I don't know. It's a bit tricky. I couldn't quite follow it. But anyway, look, it was a fucking fun time, even with Donna singing all the songs and stuff. And look, since Donna got fucking traded here to Cleveland and has been staying in our guest house, fucking drive him out the wall, tell you what. Fuck, just get your own place, dickhead. But anyway, Donna's singing along, the missus is singing along and saying all the lines because she loves it. And I'm just sitting there going, what's fucking happening, man? This is fucked. But yeah, I didn't mind it halfway, you know. So anyway, I'll give Frozen about 18 out of 10 because it was a bloody good time. It was sick as. The songs are fucking pretty gross. And also that snowman's a funny fucking prick, you know what I'm saying? So I reckon I might have to go watch the second one. Just saying. Maybe I'll get the missus to say that we should, you know. Because I don't want her nothing, but yeah, you know what I'm saying. All right, anyway. So that's it for the moment. All is okay here at Casa del Deli. Go listen to my podcast, and I hope you are staying safe. And remember, don't be a cunt. Wear a mask. All right, later, fuckers. Deli out.